Hello, everyone. My talk is entitled The Relationship Between Exchangeable Base Cation, Soil Carbon, and Soil Nitrogen in Deep Forest Soils of the Pacific Northwest. I'd like to start by thanking the conveners for inviting me to speak here. I'm very excited to be talking with people who have influenced my thoughts as a graduate student in really trying to do this work. So to start with, we've been studying some deep soils in the Pacific Northwest, largely because we think they might be important for determining how these forests are growing and why they're growing so productively in this region. We know across a variety of biomes around the world that the maximum rooting depth can be very, very deep. This is as deep as 20 meters, as recorded in Canada. In the Pacific Northwest, we were really looking at this temperate coniferous forest biome here. And you can see that we have the maximum rooting depths are often, 5 to 7 or 8 meters deep. So we know that some trees and some plants in this region are rooting quite deeply. One of the best ways that I can describe why we see some interest in deep soil processes and leaching of nutrients into deeper soils is this idea that the soil solution is net neutral. So while we might see movement of all of these positively charged cations, they are sort of at the same time balanced by negatively charged anions in the soil solution. And this was a study by Ugolini and Sletten in 1991. And they measured in this photosol that there was chloride and sulfate that were important anions for helping leach cations deeper into the soil. But they found this deficit of things that they couldn't really account for in terms of their charge balance. And what I would explain is that that's probably due to a variety of different organic acids and nitrate, which can act as ligands for moving some of these nutrient cations deeper in the soil. In terms of the types of organic acids that you might see, there are a whole variety, anywhere from very simple acetic acid, which you see here, and these are pKa's, telling you sort of the pH at which we would expect an equal amount of these carboxylic groups to be hydrated and versus free and with a negative charge. You can get some very complicated or more complicated dissolved organic acids that have multiple carboxylic acid groups. And so they can form these sort of ligand relationships with cations in soil. Our study looked at 22 different sites from southern Oregon and Pacific Northwest up to northern Washington. And we were examining on a regional scale, are there relationships evident between the base cations and the carbon and nitrogen content of these soils? This was on a bulk soil basis, so these would be integrated results over a long period of time of soil development at these sites. To get our samples, we went out with a backhoe. Obviously, it's not easy to dig a pit as deep as we were going. We dug as deep as we could go at these sites. So that was typically anywhere between 2 meters and 3 meters. Our most typical depth was 2.5 meters. And we took samples from all of these sites. Takes a while, obviously, to get all of this, all of the samples that we wanted out of the sites. We had to put some shoring into these sites. Some of them are less stable than you would want, and really for safety reasons, you want to have that shoring in. We took our bulk density samples at a variety of very regular depths across all of these soils. We also took organic horizon samples to see what the nutrient analysis could say there. So at all of our sites, we took O-horizon samples, and at regular intervals from 0 to 10, 10 to 50, down every 50 centimeters further down as deep as we could go. At 7 sites, we got down as deep as 3 meters. We did this consistently across all of our sites because we wanted to be able to compare different depths at different soils. So we didn't do multiple pits at each site, and so we wanted to have a more standard comparison down through depth. This is a couple of examples of the variety in terms of soil textures that we see. This soil over on the right is very coarse, a lot of cobbles, a lot of gravel. Whereas on the left, you see this is a much more finer textured soil. And they also have a variety of different types of clay in addition to textures. In terms of the soil carbon that we see, there's a bit in the O horizon, and we see substantial portions of the carbon deeper in the soil profile, anywhere between the half a meter to 1 meter, and really at some of these sites, almost 50% or more than 50% of carbon below 1 meter. Likewise with nitrogen, we have a fairly robust distribution with depth. Some of these soils have very little nitrogen, and most of it is concentrated in the surface, whereas we see this This soil here, the HOCO series, had much more than 50% of the soil nitrogen below 1 meter. So we see a variety of different distributions with depth in these soils and a variety of different nutrient amounts. One thing to pay attention to as I go through some of these, obviously there's the HOCO series here, which had a lot of carbon and nitrogen in it. By comparison, this Scammon series, SM down here, it has very low nitrogen, very low carbon. And just by way of comparison, also pay attention to this R here, the Ragnar series. That soil also, like the Scammon series, has very little carbon and nitrogen, but it does have lots of calcium in this case. So you can see the Scammon series had a lot of exchangeable calcium, whereas something like a HOCO series had very little exchangeable calcium. It's a very different distribution than we see for carbon and nitrogen. We see yet a different exchangeable sort of relationship with potassium. This doesn't seem to follow the same distribution as calcium in terms of where that nutrient is located in the soil profile. And finally, exchangeable magnesium. We see a very similar kind of pattern as we did with calcium. The Scammon series down here has a lot of magnesium exchangeable. HOCO series has very little. But notice that Ragnar series, it didn't have much carbon or nitrogen, and it also doesn't have very much exchangeable magnesium, exchangeable potassium. And I will get back to that question of why we see those differences in a minute. So first, some averages and some totals here. We saw 131 megagrams of carbon per hectare on average across all of these sites, of which 21% was below a meter. That goes up to 31% for nitrogen and well over 50% for all of the exchangeable cations. Now, that might not be a surprise. Obviously, a lot of these are weathering out of minerals that are deeper in the soil profile, and there's less uptake by plants at that depth, but there may also be a leaching relationship across these sites. So as we increase in total soil nitrogen, we see a decrease, on average, in the total exchangeable calcium pool. This was a fairly strong relationship, but you notice you have some sites down here, which, even though they don't have much nitrogen, don't have very much calcium, and some up here that have quite a lot. Likewise with total carbon, we see a decline with depth as we accrue more and more carbon in that soil. In terms of exchangeable magnesium, it's a similar kind of relationship. It's, again, a bit messy. You have some sites that, you know, as you increase in total soil nitrogen, you still have plenty of exchangeable magnesium, but on the whole, you tend to have this decline as you accrue total nitrogen. Likewise, again, with carbon, this is the same kind of relationship. I will say that carbon and nitrogen in this study were fairly highly correlated, and some of that is due to nitrogen being incorporated into organic matter, and some of it is going to be due to similar processes in terms of those cycles. So why would we expect such a messy relationship, and why do we see some of that messy relationship? Some of it is going to be we have different chemical compositions of the parent materials across these 22 sites, and therefore there's different amounts of nutrients that are going to be possible to weather out of that soil over time. Of course, the weathering rate will affect how fast those nutrients are released from sort of a more buried in rock to being available for plants. The quantity and composition of clay will also be very important. That Ragnar soil was all sand. It had very little in the way of clay, and so even though it doesn't have much carbon or nitrogen, it doesn't have much of an ability to hold on to these exchangeable nutrients. Whereas that HOCO site, it had maybe a very coarse texture, but it had very active clay fractions. It was highly impacted by volcanic ash, and so it had some very active allophane and amygdalite in that soil profile. Soil pH will obviously affect the stoichiometry of these interactions in soil. Finally, the plant distribution and uptake. Obviously, there's going to be more uptake where the roots are more concentrated in the surface. As you get deeper, there's certainly a few roots, but maybe not as many as you get in the surface, so you have less uptake. I will say that there was a study by Jean-Paul Laclau down in Brazil a number of years ago and his colleagues that showed that there was preferential uptake of calcium and magnesium in deeper parts of the soil profile in eucalyptus plantations. They were looking at 7 meters of depth, and they saw more uptake of those nutrients deeper in the profile than up toward the surface. In the surface, the trees seem to be taking up more or preferentially taking up nitrogen. And finally, leaching will affect these relationships in the bulk soil across these sites. And finally, these are all integrated over time. So when we're looking at these bulk soil estimates, what we're really seeing is a snapshot in the development of these different soils at different points in time. Some of them have been influenced by glaciers. They're maybe 10,000 years old. Others down in Oregon are maybe a million years old. They're much older. They have much more clay. They have much more development. And so this is really a snapshot in the course of the development of these soils. So finally, some takeaways. As soils accumulate carbon and nitrogen on the bulk, they may be leaching out exchangeable base cations. That's really a process by which nitrogen as nitrate and organic acids act as ligands and strip those out of the soil. The relationships are complicated by other factors. There are numerous different factors in soil that will affect these relationships. Finally, the long-term depletion of these over time, maybe in like the HOCO series, is probably a result of differences in rates, in process rates over time. So if your leaching rate is much higher than your weathering rate, then you can start to decline in your relative amounts of exchangeable nutrients. And finally, this may be a driver for deep root growth. If these trees aren't able to gather the calcium, for example, that they want in the surface soil, those deep roots that they're extending might not be just getting water, but also calcium and some of these other micronutrients. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions. I don't think it's well enough known. It's somewhat complicated because when you get certain amounts of like some very old soils that have quite a lot of clay, you can get some real problems with root penetration into that soil. So they may not be growing as well for a variety of different reasons. So it's maybe not quite as clear cut.
But is there an age relationship to begin with that we then might want to explain, or we're not even sure if there's a soil age leads to higher or lower growth?
I would say I personally haven't examined that, so I can't give you a straight answer on that, but I would think that there are so many different factors that affect that relationship that it would be difficult to tease out a very fine, regular relationship there. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's certainly a follow-up that needs to be had from this, because we know that different types of clay, like a kaolinite, is going to have relatively low activity compared to something like allophane. We have a variety of different ash contents in these soils. There's a lot of volcanic activity here. And so those are all relationships that still need to be teased out, and those are data that I hope to be gathering over the course of my PhD. So.
Nitrogen and carbon are increasing while base cations are decreasing, and that's why they're over time, and that's why they're negative.
Perhaps over time, and it's a complicated relationship. So as you get more organic acids that are going through, maybe leaching from the horizon down through the soil, over time, if you have a soil that has a lot of clay in it, it's going to have a high enough CEC. The Scammon series that had so much exchangeable calcium and magnesium, it's an alpha sol. It has very high CEC relative to something like the HOCO series, which is much more coarse, but it has a very active fraction of volcanic ash, and that may be why it maybe can hold on to nitrogen more preferentially than something like these exchangeable bases.
So you were looking at
We have a little bit of information about the roots, but we didn't get a very comprehensive analysis of how that rooting depth changed. We were able to take our samples, and actually Rob mentioned this in his talk on Monday, looking at whether roots were present in each of those samples as we went down each of those profiles. But that's really a minimum, it's a proxy measurement, because we would want to take much more regular samples across that pit and to see how those roots are changing over time. And, you know, it's possible that you take one sample, it just didn't hit a root that might be there elsewhere in the soil. So. Well, I will give you somewhat of an answer. At Fall River, we're doing a study. It's an LTSP site, and that site has, you don't hit bedrock until like 30 meters. I mean, it's extremely deep. And in there, we're, you know, if we're getting samples to 3 meters, we're still just really scratching the surface of that mineral soil and what's happening in that part of the soil profile.
No, I wasn't sure that Jason was going to say that. But
well, handle it.
He does well. And a lot of these soils are developed in similar places, the ones below the glaciation. So they're very deep. And we don't know how deep this carbon goes. We don't know how deep they root. It's just that one shot in time, one sample. We try to spread air efforts over the region rather than concentrate on one particular site.
I will say, when we went out, in addition to different development times, we have seen some of these profiles where there's buried horizons. So there's one that I went out to this August, and there was evidence of basically colluvium, mass movement over that slope, and we saw two different buried A horizons. There was a profile down at the very bottom. The A horizon was about 2.5 meters, and then there was a soil profile from about 1 meter to two.
Yeah.
And so there's some of this where we may be getting soil building on top of itself through mass movement and through other processes in addition to just development through time.
Okay, well, with that, we'll wrap up.
Thank you.